Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we are on the 14th episode of Season 4, the 61st episode overall, Love in Vain.
That's right, and we have a special guest with us today.
We do? Yes, we do. It's our old pal, Thomas Howeth, from the X-Minutes podcast. Thomas, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to coming on the show.
Yeah, welcome. Oh,
we are really happy to have you here. Thomas contacted me a few months ago. He was starting his new podcast, X Minutes. I know a bunch of our fans are also listening to your show too online. You run a great little community on Facebook, and your show is great. And I'm just really happy to have you here. Yeah. So, Tom, yeah, can you just tell us a little bit about?
Sure. We're part of a community called the Movies by Minutes community, where we break down, a lot of us have broken down a lot of movies 1 minute at a time. A couple friends of mine from that decided we wanted to go into the X-Men movies because we're all X-Men fans. And we decided 1 minute at a time was a little too in-depth, so we decided to go one scene at a time for our show. And that's been working out rather well. I have two co-hosts, Jerry and Steve, and they're both super comic nerds. I came into the show with a background of loving this show, the animated series, and I didn't have the comic background that they have, but I've been working on that. So I've much improved my knowledge about that, but I started from a love of this show.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm a legitimate fan of your show. I've been listening. It's extremely genial and fun. And you guys, you go on flights of fancy, which I appreciate. You're, you know, independent thinkers, which I appreciate. And it's just a really good show. And I really can't recommend it enough to our fans. I think a lot of them know about it already, like I said. And I'm very excited to listen. I'm wondering, are you guys, you're really going to go through every X-Men movie? Is that the goal?
That is the goal. This first season, we're kind of taking it really slow. I think next season we might speed it up a bit and either do larger chunks of the movie at a time or maybe double up episodes during the week. Something to get us from a little bit quicker, because otherwise we'd be doing it for like 15 years if we took one per year.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. There's so many X-Men movies,
yeah,
and to knock them like down all in a row is like a really ambitious challenge.
Well, it's ambitious, but it does give us conversation topics for a long time, so
that's the optimistic approach.
So I just talking about the X-Men movies, I hate to like spoil your own show a bit, but what's your favorite one just off the top of your head? Or can you even pick a favorite?
I can, and I have, and I'm going to have to go back and fact check myself. I might have said something different because it apparently shifts. But I think when we talked about this on the show, we mentioned that we're including all the Deadpool movies, all the Wolverine movies and stuff like that.
As you should, yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think Logan's probably one of my favorites. That's probably right there at the top for me. The first X-Men has a special place because it kind of started everything. Mm-hmm. But Logan was just such a fantastic film.
Yeah. I obviously Logan is great. I think for me, X-Men 1 is still my favorite. When I really think about all of them, just because it started everything, and in so many ways it started the MCU, and even though it's not officially connected to the MCU, Kevin Feige was a producer on it, and it launched the birth of Marvel films in the serious and consumed way that are out there right now, in pop culture.
Yeah, there was something really special about it being the first also, because anybody that was a fan of the comics or this show had a lot of anticipation built up before that one came out, and it paid off in a certain way. I think like the nostalgia factor is really big on that one.
Yeah, definitely. And to me, Yeah, and it's also the X-Men movie that most had me dying in my seat for a sequel right away.
Yeah.
I think I was 16. Yeah, I was 16 when the movie came out, and when the last scene when Magneto and Professor X are just having a conversation about, oh, we'll see what the future holds, and they're playing chess, I was just like, I need to see the sequel immediately. Right. This was too, like, they've really just laid out the groundwork, and, you know, it's not a perfect movie. It's not the most... what's the right word? It doesn't have the most production value, but it had all the elements that just made you think, like, oh, if they just put a little more effort into it, it's going to be really amazing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And a little more budget, yeah. A little more everything. And
yeah,
but they were on such soft, footing then too, though. They had no idea whether it would all work or not, or if they were jumping into a hole that they couldn't jump out of. So
Right. They
really had to be careful. They really had to be careful at the beginning, and I think they managed to walk that line really well.
Yeah, and just to keep harping on X-Men 1 for me, like I think I've said it before, that that feeling of anticipation for the sequel was the hardest hit of, and I hate to use this metaphor analogy, of heroin I had as a cinema goer. Like, that was like I still feel, watching all the Marvel movies to this day, you know, even disconnected with the X-Men, I'm still searching for that feeling I had at 16 when X-Men 1 ended. And I was promised another movie, and I'm so excited to see what happens next.
Yeah.
And you get that to a degree with all the, you know, the modern Avengers movies and things. But looking back on it, it never hit as hard as it did when X-Men 1 ended. At least for me, that's how I felt.
I feel you completely. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So I was wondering, Thomas, you requested to be on the show for this episode in particular. Can I... maybe this might be better answered at the end of the show, but I was just wondering, like, is there a particular reason that this episode interested you?
Honestly, I hadn't watched the series in quite a while when I started talking to Willie about it, and I was like, he asked me what episode I wanted to do. And so I started really just looking through brief synopses of all the synopses. Whatever.
Yeah.
Of all the episodes. And this one, the honest reason I chose it is because it has a tie to the X-Men movie, with her taking the powers from her boyfriend in the beginning. And it just kind of, that's the way our movie starts out. So I was like, that's a decent one. And then I watched the episode.
The infamous Cody. Yeah.
It takes some turns, but I chose this, though.
And you know, I hope we can, as we go along talking about the episode, I hope we can discuss a bit how this is a pretty run-of-the-mill X-Men animated series episode. It's very good. It's very really?
It's good. I don't know if run-of-the-mill is how I would describe it.
Right. Yeah, maybe that's the wrong word, but I mean, it's a standalone where it's not before the quality really dipped poorly in season 5.
Uh-huh.
It's run-of-the-mill. It's got its normal high marks of just like it being a snappy, well-written episode.
Gotcha.
Where all the loose ends relatively tie up. So my point is just I hope that we could talk about in ways in which the animated show is similar or different from the movies too, which is a theme we always talk about here as well. But let's see how much of that even comes up.
Sure.
Yeah, so this episode, Love in Vain, it's primarily a rogue episode,
mm-hmm.
when you say, Sonya. I guess Wolverine is, he's kind of like part B.
He's the B-plot.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right, yeah. But it further explores Rogue's lovelornness by virtue of her powers, which mm-hmm. isolate her romantically from specifically Gambit, who unfailingly... is always hitting on Rogue whenever the situation calls for it.
Yeah, but we've seen their relationship.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, albeit a bit creepily.
We've talked a lot about in this podcast about workplace sexual harassment when it comes to Rogue and Gambit, especially because Gambit knows he can't go anywhere with Rose. I mean, forget about it just being inappropriate in the first place, but
that's
beyond that,
it keeps spurring him on, though, right?
But it's but it's a teasing to the point of harassment, I think, because yeah. it's almost like he's rubbing it in her face.
But she responds to him like over the course of these yeah, episodes. Like she really like warms up to him more and more, and like responds to his advances.
I think there's some Stockholm syndrome going on. He's just wearing her down in a really negative way. Mm. But yeah, so this episode opens. Yeah, it's an exploration of Rogue and her isolation. It opens with a shot of Jean and Scott living the fancy Westchester life, hanging out with their convertible in front of the X mansion, casually making out. It should be noted, Thomas, that they've recently gotten married for real. They've had a couple of false marriages, or at least one false marriage, mm-hmm. and one interrupted wedding. But now they are officially married in the show, at least. And Rogue is a lot, oftentimes when you see Scott and Jean really happy, Rogue's in the distance crying as she watches. Yeah.
So you're saying this pretty much runs the same line that the comics did, where they're off again, on again, they try to get married, they can't get married, and then eventually they finally do.
Right, and it also lines up with the comics in the sense it's in the sweet spot of that mid-90s era when Jean and Scott were married, and there's a relative stability to that romantic plot point. I remember as a kid reading those comics in the 90s, and it really seemed like Jean and Scott were finally together forever, and they were just a normal couple now. There's no more Phoenix, no more Dark Phoenix, no more Madeline Pryors and other weird backstory things and clones. Like they really, like they're two regular people finally together, and that was going to be that. But then in the comics, at least, as things went on, you know, Jean died, I think at least a couple more times. And then Scott.
Phoenix.
Right. <Yeah. laughs> And Scott ended up with Emma Frost, which is a big like a twist it's of weird, events. Yeah. But like this exists in that time, and like a Frozen in Amber of like the stability and security of the mid-90s and all things being normal
Scott
and happy.
And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, I mean, because X-Men is basically a soap opera. There are soap operas that had the same kind of things happening. General Hospital had I can't even remember their names anymore. There was a big love that finally came together and they're finally able to get married, and it all happened around the same time. So it's like the 90s kind of set this theme of, okay, we know you guys have been waiting for this forever and we're finally going to give it to you.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, the Scott and Jean romance is actually quite destructive in the X world, now that I'm thinking about it, because it not only does it make Rogue feel bad, but Wolverine is like also severely depressed at Scott and Jean being a thing.
Yeah.
So
I think that's his own fault, though.
Yeah.
You know,
when
the
you
one thing I don't
yourself up for failure, you know, you can't be disappointed when you get it.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah. Yeah.
Really
absolutely.
Pointing the finger in the right direction there.
So, you know, we see Rogue, she's like very emotionally distraught. She can't experience love, and that's kind of all she wants in a way. She wants a human connection. She wants a more normal life.
Isn't that all any of us want?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a big part of what a lot of us want in life, but, and she can't have it. And,
yeah,
it's a theme they play up big time in the movies as well. You know, compared to the movies, Thomas, I love this version of Rogue so much more than what we get in the movies, even though there's many similar themes going on. Well, I don't know how you feel about that.
This is my Rogue. This is the Rogue that I grew up with, like I said. So it took a while for me to grow into appreciating Anna Paquin for what she did on X-Men, because it was so different than what I was expecting. I'm like, why doesn't she fly? Why isn't she strong?
And why isn't she sassier?
Right. And I didn't have the comic knowledge to know why it was that Rogue flew. I didn't know she took her powers from Miss Marvel or whatever, you know, or Captain Marvel. And I
think it was Miss Marvel at the time, but yeah, eventually Captain Marvel. Yeah.
Carol Danvers, let's say that.
Right.
She took her powers from Carol Danvers. I didn't know that. And I just knew that Rogue flew and Rogue was super strong and she could take people's powers. So when all I saw was her as this teenager walking around and accidentally taking people's powers, I didn't know. There was a disconnect for me. I didn't know how it got from A to B. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I, well, to me, I – I had a sense of what they're going for in the movie at the time. I just never liked it. It never sat well with me. And I think Anna Paquin does a fine job as Rogue in the character that's written for her. And I think she's a fine actress. But I just, to me, it was a weak spot in the movies that always stood out to me. I'm hopeful. I've said it many times, but I'm hopeful with this Disney acquisition that potentially could go through that. They're going to go with more cartoon like Rogue that we've seen. I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of reasons why that's going to be the case. But when they reboot Rogue, which I think they will, they're going to want a strong, super powerful female character with a lot of sass and self, you know, urgency and self-confidence and things like that.
One thing that they did with the movie was, of course, taking Rogue is not just Rogue in the movie. She's actually like a combination of her and Jubilee,
Pride,
and every other person that Logan has mentored during his time. So if you combine like cartoon Jubilee and cartoon Rogue, I could see you coming up with something like the character of Anna Paquin's character.
Yeah, but you know, and to me though, I totally agree, but I would have just picked Kitty Pryde and not have bothered. I think the reason they went with Rogue is because they wanted to use her powers more as a plot device for whatever story they were cooking up, which is totally fine, and I think it works. And her power is really interesting in a lot of ways. But I would have just said, well, to me, more than a plot contrivance for my script, I want to get the characters right. So I would have just selected Kitty Pryde as a focal point to begin with. And that's another thing I think we're going to get more down the road. I think we're going to get a better version of Kitty Pryde or a more central figure. You know, I feel like if I had to give a big criticism of the X-Men movies, I think a lot of the X-Women characters haven't been given their due. And they haven't lived up to the potential of what we see in the cartoon and the comic books as of yet, at least to my satisfaction.
I agree completely.
I mean, you can go down the line with Storm. She was sort of underwritten and half-baked. Jean Grey's was poorly written, especially in X-Men 3. You know, it's just, it hasn't, and like in my problems with Rogue, it just hasn't been as satisfying as it could be. And I think, you know, I think we have a lot to look forward to with a full reboot of the franchise.
Yeah, I'm hoping they do something really good with Dark Phoenix. And then I'm really looking forward to the New Mutants movie as well. I'm hoping that we'll see some of that there.
Well, I'm hopeful too, but I don't know. I have a feeling Dark Phoenix is not going to be good. And New Mutants, I have no idea. We'll see. Yeah. All right, so let's jump back into this episode. Sure. So meanwhile, so Rogue is sad. She's breaking furniture in her room. She's real lovelorn. Gambit arrives. He does not help the situation. He kind of rubs it in her face a little bit more.
It's just hard to imagine what his motivations are, really, really. Like, other than just kind of, like, having fun, it's like he's really ready to just, like, wreck himself by, like, touching her skin.
And he's done it before, too.
Yeah. And like,
kissed her while she was sleeping in one episode.
Right.
Yeah. And he went into a coma like right away. Gambit, I think it's not more complicated than what it is. He's just enormously attracted to Rogue. He sees a gorgeous, beautiful woman and he just can't, and they're both from the South. You know, I think he just can't help himself. Uh-huh. When he sees Rogue, he becomes like a total slobbering idiot.
Like there's something about that forbidden fruit, the fruit that you know you can't have to.
Yeah.
Really spurs him on here.
Right, and what woman could, and for Gambit, what woman could resist him too? That's like an element playing in his mind as well. And, you know. But anyway, go on.
Gambit without his costume on. How often do you guys see that on the show?
You know,
not often.
Well, no, I think more often than you think. We were always sort of pointing out he's playing basketball in a bunch of episodes.
I remember those.
He's often going out nights on the town in his like mid-90s high couture men's fashion.
I think it's just that like he looks so different without his costume versus with it. That like we pointed out every time because we're like, wow, look at it, you know what I mean? Whereas like Rogue,
the facial
like
buttresses and stuff,
the
like
facial
that.
Buttresses is really the thing. Yeah, you actually see his whole face. Whereas like with Rogue, like she's out of costume in this episode, but it's like not quite as
she's in the green and yellow.
Stark a difference, and purple, but.
I would say, you know, Gambit, another character not given his proper due in the X-Men movies, and you know, I don't know, I think. That's another movie that has always been promised too. Is Channing Tatum as Gambit? solo movie.
I'm not sure if that'll ever happen, especially with the acquisition, how it is.
Yeah. But
I've always liked Gambit because I knew him from the cartoon, and apparently I didn't remember how creepy he was. I liked his power set, though, and I liked how cool he looked when he was doing everything. So I'm looking forward to hopefully them doing it right somewhere and sometime.
Absolutely. And I'll defend Gambit in the cartoon because you're right. He is pretty creepy in the show, but he's also loyal to Rogue, too. He's not...
Again, I don't think it's that creepy for the sole reason that it is reciprocated. You know, like Rogue stops herself because she knows that she could just kill this guy like so quickly and easily if she like, you know, went along with him or whatever.
But she is in love with
him. But she does love him. Yeah. So I don't think it's that creepy.
And I've also speculated that there's ways they could make it work too. There's safe sex clothing that they could probably figure out how to.
Without getting too graphic. I don't want to imagine Gambit in full on leather with the face mask and the ball gag.
I mean, it's like not super different from their regular spandex outfits, though.
Yeah.
Like, I mean. Anyway.
All right, we can all use our imaginations there. meanwhile, Wolverine is in the desert somewhere. I can't tell if it's South America or Texas. There's an establishing shot of planet Earth where a weird flying fish is entering our atmosphere. So I think it's the Southwest based on the topography of the landscape. But anyway, a flying fish is heading towards our atmosphere.
Space whales.
Yeah, right. Very Star Trekian in its appearance.
I think there's a comic line in X-Men that actually follows space whales somehow. I didn't have time to look it up, but I'm pretty sure there's a certain storyline that had space whales in it.
Yeah, you're right. It also touched like an ancient damaged memory nerve in my brain too, where I feel like I've read about it in a comic as well, but I couldn't quite place it. This is where we reach out to our X-Men Test Facebook fans to inform us of all the encyclopedic knowledge that we just don't possess anymore. But yeah, so it's kind of this like creepy flying fish in space, which is a concept I actually really liked, at least from Star Trek. I remember they had similar things. They had like floating jellyfish in space that were sentient to an extent. And I think that's like a cool, I could see that existing somewhere in the Milky Way galaxy for real.
Mm-hmm. Doctor Who did something very similar as well. They had a city that was on the back of a whale pretty much.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so there you go. So it's a semi-common sci-fi trope. So anyway, it just happens to land within like 1 square mile of Wolverine's location.
Just so happens.
Right. And Wolverine, of all people on Earth, is the one to make first contact with this alien species, which, you know, maybe not the best, friendliest representative of mankind to make first contact. But
I mean, it's not an accident, though. They're,
right, yeah.
They're looking for him.
That's a twist, yeah. Right. But go on.
Do you think they land like that all the time, just slamming into the ground like that? Or do they have better procedures than it was a failed land?
I don't think space whales are really equipped with the proper landing gear for Earth.
Well, yeah. Like
unless they landed in the ocean. That
right.
Would be a little
more. If it lands in the... You would think 70% of the surface of the Earth is covered in water. That's all this landing space, you know.
But that's not where Wolverine is, so...
No, of course not. You're right.
So this is trying to land one of those water airplanes in the desert,
basically. landing the spruce goose on a desert step. So Wolverine, he comes across these aliens, and like I said, he's making first contact. He immediately pops his claws, which is not, like I said, not the friendliest gesture, but you know, the twist is that they were looking for him. These aliens that emerge from this flying flounder fish thing. They look like lizard bug people, but Wolverine keeps insisting on calling them cockroaches, which I don't think is like an apt description of them. To me, they're more like lizard people.
He's just being.
I think they were trying to pull from the again pulling from different parts of the comics. I think these are supposed to be the Brood.
I think they might be the Brood too, but and my memory of future X-Men episodes gets hazy, but I think the Brood feature in a future episode. So unless this is the one I'm thinking of where this is the Brood ripoff episode, I think there is a proper Brood episode yet to come in the X-Men series. I might be wrong about that, but maybe this is that episode. I don't know. My memories are a little hazy. But yeah, we'll see. going forward. But like I said, it did, like, every time he kept calling them cockroaches, I thought that was a little inaccurate. But I don't know. Maybe when they wrote the script and recorded the lines and then they actually drew the episode, the concept changed or something.
And then back in the 90s, apparently anything from outer space was from Mars.
Right, yeah.
He calls them cockroaches from Mars. They couldn't be anywhere else, right?
Yeah. So they're fighting with Wolverine. They've got, like, weird Dr. Octopus-type technology. These tentacles blasting him with, you know, laser energy and stuff. And they actually...
But also, like, scorpion tails that shoot stuff.
Right, yeah. And the X-Men... So Wolverine is sort of overwhelmed. And meanwhile, so that's sort of what's going on with Wolverine. So he's like the other star of this episode. And meanwhile, back at the X-Mansion, a little bit more with Rogue, she gets a phone call out of the blue from her old friend Cody.
Old boyfriend.
Right.
Talk about random.
Yeah, and this is the era before Facebook or Tinder or Instagram, where it's like way easier to reach out creepily to an ex girlfriend or boyfriend from
now. Sonny, how would you feel if somebody that you knew, like, from decades before randomly called you up without any notice
and wanted to and ask you out for a date?
I personally I don't know, probably be like, hey, great, haven't heard from you in a long time. I don't know, how would you feel?
It's so random. And so I'm especially since she had been thinking about him already. That's right, just weird.
Yeah.
It is weird. And Cody's behavior, as we'll see in this episode, is very... If we think Gambit's creepy, I think Cody takes the creepiness to a whole other level.
This guy's trouble.
So yeah, right. So Rogue is in a very emotionally vulnerable place right now. She agrees to meet this guy, Cody. And the backstory is she was the first boy she kissed. It was also when her mutant powers first activated. So she puts him in a coma, and he's not a mutant, he's a human. So she just saps his energy. And part of that, she gets a lot of his memories too. So Cody's like one of these ghosts floating around her brain, along with Ms. Marvel as well, mm-hmm. So she's kind of haunted by this experience as well. And that's also the story is that after she put this guy in the hospital, she ran away from home. She was thrown out by her parents, by her dad, at least in the cartoon. In the cartoon, it's just her father who's kind of racist. In the movie, we don't really see what her parents' reaction to it is, mm-hmm. but we can assume it's something similar. So Cody now is all grown up, and he, you know, wants a reunion with Rogue, and he strongly hints that he's still very interested in her. So they decide to meet, like, I guess somewhere in Greenwich Village, maybe, Sonia.
Oh.
It looked, I don't know, just like, or like they go to the film art movie theater. So I feel like there's a lot of like art house movie theaters in Greenwich Village and mm-hmm. Lower East Side, things like that.
Okay.
So they meet in the city, and he's just as countrified as she is. He calls her possum and has a whole bunch of other country like malapropisms.
Southern, more than country.
Oh, right. Yeah. Southern. Right. Yeah. So they seem like, on the surface, they seem like a match.
Yeah. Well, again, up to this point, it's not so creepy because it's reciprocated.
Right.
Right. Like, she's very interested in meeting him again. And like, it doesn't get creepy yet.
Yeah. Give it 2 minutes.
We'll be give it 2 minutes.
Well, even before they have a major exchange, he's just crossing the street to see her, and he backflips over a speeding car and is perfectly fine.
Well, she catches him.
I know, but still, the fact... Most people don't have the ability to leap over cars as they're about to be run over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, spoilers, it turns out he's been sort of infested with these spore lizard people, and he's got this ulterior mission to kidnap Rogue. But is that, like, can he leapfrog over this car because of that, of what's happened to him, or is it just because he's got good reflexes?
The leapfrog is actually him getting hit by the car, but they didn't draw it very well.
I think you're right. So I don't know, that just like struck me as super weird that, you know.
Oh, I thought that scene was drawn in so that like she would have to save him, and that then there's like this moment of nostalgia between them where he's like, oh, I sure remember you and how, like, strong you are,
or being in your arms or something
like that. Yeah.
So anyway, she lets him know that she doesn't like being called possum. They go off on a date, and then Cody like goes
backs her into an alley.
Like, yeah, backs her into an alley and goes after it hard. Creepy. Yeah,
no, just, like, puts it all out there. Possum here.
Yeah,
and I don't know about you, but Possum is not the small animal that I've always associated with Rogue.
Right.
Everyone else calls her a skunk, and for some reason he calls her a possum.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Do they call, in the comics, they call her skunk or something? Is that part of her?
I just know it's her hair. Her hair always makes right. people think of a skunk instead yeah. of a possum of all things.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just, Cody's a weird guy. And like, so,
that's what you take away.
Yeah. Because like Sonya said, he gets her in an alley right away, and he's kind of forcing himself on her. And
she even like starts to like walk out of the alley a little bit, and he like spins her around and like pushes her like deeper into this dark alleyway. Like
this whole walk and talk is really creepy.
Yeah,
like she's like you said, she's trying to move away, and who just goes to these random dark alleys to talk to somebody?
Yeah, that's a good question. Sonia, we live in New York. Would we ever like duck out into a back alley to discuss something? No, right? You even. That part of the benefits of living in a city like New York is you can have an intimate private conversation as you walk through a crowd of people.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, right. It'd be really bizarre to stop in an alley.
Yep.
Yeah. Just thinking about that from a practical point of view, like if an alley serves any sort of use from a social conversation standpoint, it doesn't.
Now, do you think he was put up to this? Was he told, get her back into this alley and we'll be waiting for her?
Well, or? I think that's part of it, and clearly his motivation is kind of, it's bizarre in this episode, because you know, it's later turned out that he's been kidnapped by these aliens, and they force him to lure Rogue into a vulnerable situation,
right?
Because they want Rogue to be the new brood queen, for lack of a better word. And so he's like doing a job, but he also genuinely loves her, and he makes that point several times in the episode that he's deeply in love with her still,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of bizarre too, because when they last were together, they were 14.
Right. And this was like, what is she in her early
20s? Like, yeah, she's like 24. It's like, it's eight, like 10 years.
10 years ago or yeah. something.
And she put him in a coma, and she ran away and never saw him again.
Right.
So for him to genuinely still love her is a little strange.
That must have been one hell of a kiss.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I mean, Rogue is drawn as beautifully as a woman can be drawn, I would say. It's like she is irresistibly beautiful. So,
but it just makes you wonder, like, how the aliens approached Cody in the first place, right? Were they, like, looking for him because they knew that he would be able to manipulate her, and well, she's, like, strong and, like, invulnerable, basically?
I would say, like, yes, they were. She said, or the Brew Queen says that she's been...
Is that your daughter?
Yeah, the Brew Queen says that she's been watching for decades. And,
right. And she has footage of all the other cartoon episodes.
Yeah.
She's right. edited it into a nice like reel to review.
So I mean, it just seems like these aliens would be like brainwashing Cody to be like, you still love her, now do this job for us, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They manipulate him to manipulate her. So
yeah, maybe he'd completely forgotten about her until they said, oh yeah, remember that one girl you kissed? Let's wake you up with her.
And look how she looks now. She looks great. I was like, all right.
You want that, don't you? Yeah. We can get that for you.
So it's all set up. The aliens surreptitiously blast Cody and Rogue with some energy. Rogue doesn't notice. And that allows Cody to kiss her without getting her mutant power being activated. We can all assume that's what's going on. And she's ecstatic about the fact that her powers don't work anymore. She doesn't ask any questions about it. That doesn't raise any alarm bells. You would think that she would immediately want to talk to Professor X about it or fly back to the mansion and run some tests. But instead, she just accepts it like, oh, my life has changed. Thank
yeah,
God.
This is what she's been wanting all this time.
Right.
She doesn't even know if it's just him that she can kiss or if it's anybody.
Yeah. Right. She's just so, I think, so emotionally vulnerable here that she's just willing to be gilded along this fantasy path.
Mm-hmm.
And then
all Gene and God's fault.
Exactly.
And then she kind of, I guess at some point she passes out. I forget exactly what happens, but the aliens maybe attack them again or something. And
I think it's just part of like the pollen stuff,
right? Yeah,
it like makes her pass out on a park bench with Cody or something.
Right. So anyway, let's cut back to Wolverine. He's been captured. He wakes up inside the Flounder prison, spaceship, which is pretty disgusting because it's kind of like pulsating and it's alive, and Wolverine realizes it's alive. And it's interesting that you would think that Wolverine, being who he is, would immediately start slashing through it to find an escape, but instead he has a rare note of empathy for the creature, and he surmises instantly that, oh, it must be being held against its will by these roach people.
Now, one thing I appreciate that they did here is they gave Wolverine something that he could actually fight and use his claws on in the
brood, yes,
if we're calling him that.
Right.
So he's actually got something he can slice up with his claws, which is a rarity for him, unless they're sentinels or whatever. He usually has to resort to other ways of fighting him. So it was a nice touch that he got to slice some stuff.
Yeah.
Up.
If there's anything metallic in the show, Wolverine will slash it to make up for all the times that he can't slash flesh on the show. So, exactly. And he threatens it so much. Like, he so dangerously and menacingly pops his claws when he meets new people all the time in the show. He always looks like he's on the verge of murder. And someone's like, more often than not, someone is grabbing his arm to pull it back from killing somebody.
Yep.
You know, he's like in full scream when he's about to slash. Like, even when it's a character like Banshee, you know, sort of like normal, regular guy who just kind of gets on his bad side, he pops his claws and he's ready to kill him. Mm-hmm. So, right. I also appreciate that he has some metallic things to slash up here. Anyway, he finds an easy escape from the fish ship. He climbs up out of there. He's sort of wandering around the desert looking for, you know, a phone, I guess, and he finds one. And he calls the X-Mansion somehow on a public payphone, and he gets in touch with Professor X. The X-Men are back at the mansion. They realize something is really bizarre because he can barely say two sentences, and
Now, let's look at what he actually says there.
Okay.
he kind of says something like, "Help, there are too many of them. Roaches." Yeah. Now, the people back at the mansion have to translate this somehow into, "I need you to come help me, and this is where I'm
right
at."
Yeah. I mean, luckily Professor X has Cerebro, and I think he could sort of pin down where Wolverine is, and also I think they're experienced enough at this point to not just dismiss. I feel like in past episodes they might have dismissed these things as like, oh, he's just crazy right now, we better ignore it for the time being. Mm-hmm. But now I think they've learned their lessons at the very least to follow up a lead that seemed mightily suspicious.
Yeah.
So Wolverine is struggling. meanwhile, Rogue wakes up in Central Park somewhere with this guy Cody, and again, more alarm bells do not go off in her head. Which is, did I just pass out in the park and you just waited here and watched me the whole night?
Yeah, they do go off. She says that to him.
She does, but then he just says, "Oh no, I just thought it would be rude to wake you or something."
Yeah,
she's
so
like,
weird.
She's like, "Okay," and then he's like, "Run away with me. Let's just be together now." She's like, "Yeah, I think that's a good idea." But she's like, "I better tell my friends first." He's like, "Yeah, I'm cool with that." So she flies to the X-Mansion and explains to them, like, "Listen, I need some personal days." And they immediately...
Professor X is like, "This is not a good time."
Yeah.
This is like a very corporate moment for Professor X. Yeah. Being like,
Isn't there a term for what he's doing here? It's like... high pressure love or something like that he's doing, like, "You love me, right? We got to do this, right? You said you had feelings for me.
Are you talking about Cody and Rogue?
There's some term.
Yeah,
there's a term for what he's doing, and it's basically manipulation.
Yeah, some kind of emotional manipulation of her. You know, he's pulling out all the old tricks.
It's like high stress salesmanship. Yeah. Or something.
And she's in a position where it works because he's got something that she really needs emotionally, and in the case here, it's that she can touch him and he'll be fine.
Right.
So, you know, how could she leave that? So she, you know, you could see how she would be driven to make some drastic life alterations. Mm-hmm. Although she's only asking Professor X for some time off. She's not really asking to quit the X-Men or anything. And she gets...
But it is time off to get married.
Oh, right. Okay, fine. But still, and Professor X, she gets really indignant when Professor X tells her, "No, it's not a good time. We have to save your friend Wolverine." But, and
He shuts her down hardcore.
Yeah. It really, you know, honestly, I could relate to Rogue in that moment, because there's times where I've asked my various bosses in my various careers for time off, and you get the third degree. Like, really, you want to take off that week? You know, we don't have that much coverage as it is. You sure you want to do it? You can. But you're really letting us down. And so that just personally drives me crazy in the work world, just being shot down for, you know, when you have the time and you're told no.
Well, then Rogue lives out your fantasy because she's like, well, screw it. I'm going to do it anyway. Bye.
Sticks it
like,
to the man.
I'm going anyway.
Right. Where are we in the episode here? So, yeah, so Rogue doesn't get to use her personal days, although she just leaves. She just does. I guess it's just time off where she's not going to be paid. And she kind of, I guess she just hijacks one of the jets from the X-Mansion. A jet we've never really seen before. Mm-hmm. Normally...
Yeah, that little mini flyer.
Well, yeah, normally it's like a personal mini flyer yellow jet where it just seats one person. Here, the jet she steals, it's like a two-seater that's tan-colored. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she takes Cody along for a ride. And it just so happens that... Well, Cody's like, I'm going to take you somewhere special. And she's like, oh, this is a surprise? But she's the one flying the jet, and she doesn't know where she's going, which is kind of bizarre, too.
Now, what about the way Gambit reacts to this?
Yeah. It wouldn't be
he has a pretty strong reaction.
Yeah, he's not like, happy about
this
it.
This is like her. Yeah, she just brought some random guy back here. She never does stuff like
right,
that.
Right, right. Yeah, Gambit is a combination of jealous and weirdly protective over someone he's not dating. Right. But we've talked about the bond between Rogue and Gambit. So, I mean, it makes sense. It logically makes sense emotionally that he would react that way. Mm-hmm. But still, the lines between Gambit and Rogue from a workplace standpoint are too blurry in this X-Men universe. And Gambit, I think, habitually oversteps them. They're all going to the same place. Professor X tracked down where Wolverine is. Rogue, by means of Cody, is lured to where this fish thing is in the desert. So they're all arriving in the same location. Wolverine is discovered sort of sweating to death in the hot sun, passed out on the ground. And at this moment, when they all discover him, he turns into a lizard man himself, sort of like the Incredible Hulk in a weird way, because he turns green and then just runs off shirtless in the desert. It reminded me of like an old 1970s Incredible Hulk episode.
Definitely. Yeah.
It made me wonder why, like, Wolverine really struggled through the desert to get to this, like, payphone, I guess, where he like called collect to Professor X or whatever. Why does he struggle back through the desert to get back to this fish spaceship? Does he need to free the fish?
He healed.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess he knows that's where he has to meet the X-Men.
He knows, like, something's going down.
Yeah, and he, you know, he's always up for a fight, so maybe he thinks he's going to go back and fight them more.
Okay.
I'm not sure. That's a good question, like, why he wanders back. He should be wandering to, like a hotel or something to just relax in some air conditioning and get some water and food. And
I think he definitely wants to be part of the fight.
So, you know, now that all the characters are gathered, Cody reveals himself as a pawn of the Brood people. Although Rogue realizes that quickly that he's an innocent pawn, that he was sort of kidnapped by these creatures because they'd been, you know, secretly watching the X-Men for the past decades. Mm-hmm. And it's not his fault. And she feels really bad because she says, if you didn't even know me, then you wouldn't have been drawn into this horribleness. And, so in a way, they take a lot of the blame off Cody. He's not quite the weird, rapey, you know, sex, date, drug, rapist person.
Wow, went down a rabbit hole.
Well, you know what I mean.
All right.
All the bad things about dating. He's a bit innocent of them. And then, you know, it turns out Wolverine's, you know, he's run off to more into another part of the desert, but he's able to heal himself from these. What they're described as, he was like infected with these pollen-like spores that turn you into a lizard person. The lizard people can't reproduce with each other. They have to find host bodies for their race to continue. Mm-hmm. And Wolverine's healing factor does him a solid, and he's able to expel the poison. And I wanted to say, guys, that in the history of the show, I think this is the most his healing factor has worked dramatically, at least in the cartoon. Because
I loved it. It was a nice touch here. Because I was kind of thinking about that as it happened to him. I was like, oh, it'd be really cool if he used his healing. Oh, he's using his healing.
Yeah, I was like legitimately wondering, watching this cartoon, like, how's he going to get out of this? Because his healing factor is really wimpy in the cartoon. It's not what we see in the movies where he can get a limb blown off and it grows back, or shot in the brain and he's fine, more or less. You know, like in the movies, it can get a lot gorier with it. But in the cartoon, it's kind of an underplayed aspect of his powers. And oftentimes he's hospitalized and has to recover for days, even though, you know, even though he doesn't even look like in one episode early on, he fights Sabretooth and Sabretooth slashes him in the stomach and he needs like days of rest to heal from that wound. So even though it does heal, it's not like what we see in the movies where his healing factor is working overtime.
Like right before your eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool in this episode that like it's finally actually pulling its weight for a change.
Now, what did you guys think of the cartoon montage that the Brew Queen shows?
Well, it's not the first time we've seen in this show of a villain having weird intimate footage of the X-Men from particular episodes after reviewing. I believe Mr. Sinister has the same footage. Yep. Also Mojo in the Mojoverse.
That one kind of makes sense though. That is written into the storyline.
Right.
Yeah, I know. I actually like this episode has some parallels with Mr. Sinister in general.
Yeah.
Because of like this like fish prison that they're in.
Right. A gross organic prison is going on. Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know what that says about the video montage exactly, but
it just means there's like a lot more weird, like covert photojournalism going on in the X-Men's adventures than they lead us to believe. Maybe they're a lot more public, and it would make sense because they're oftentimes in the show, they're fighting in Washington, D.C., and they're often fighting in Midtown, Manhattan. So, you know, they must have been captured on film, but.
So you think all these villains just have access to CCTV cameras?
Well, it's that or the X-Men have been on the news. And But these aliens made a point of saying that they've been observing the X-Men for decades. Mm-hmm. So they have their own invisible covert cameras floating around. And then the twist here, Wolverine, he's fine. He makes it back to Rogue. She's turned into a hideous monster. And I think there's nothing worse of a punishment for a human being than to be turned into a monster. That's like as bad as it gets if you're a human, like, you know, to have your humanity stripped away in such a seemingly irreversible way is pretty bad. And Rogue is not ready to go on this journey as Cody is, who's in full lizard man mode.
Right.
Yeah.
Cause he thinks they can be together.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the same thing that the thing went through when he got transformed. He wasn't sure that he could accept his body the way it was.
Right. Yeah. It's like the worst like body horror that you could possibly go through. Yeah. The thing is like the most tragic of all those types of characters in the Marvel universe. It's a good mention there. Like it's like terrible. Imagine just being the thing, just being made of rocks. It's awful. You can't interact with anything like tactile in the regular human world easily. Mm-hmm. You would think, right? Like doorknobs and shower levers and food and stuff like that. So Rogue is terrified, but luckily Wolverine shows up. She absorbs Wolverine's powers, much like in X-Men 1. Mm-hmm. And she gets the healing factor and it fights off the spore infection. So Rogue is safe. Then they go off and rescue the other X-Men. Professor X comes to the rescue. He makes mental contact with this fish, which we learn is called the Aconte, and he realizes it's a beautiful species that needs to be set free. Mm-hmm. So he manages to, you know, free this fish. The fish itself, once it's free, it lets out a beautiful song that it sings, but it drives these bug creatures crazy.
I mean, it sounds like a whale call.
Right, you know? Yeah.
What do they call it? Whale sounds.
Yeah, like a whale song.
Yeah.
Right. So Rogue describes the sound that the fish makes as beautiful, but the bug monsters think it's like terrible to their physiology or something. And here I wanted to talk about, like, this is the most tragic part of the episode. It seems like everything's fine except for Cody.
Right.
Rogue's like, Cody, come back with me to the X-Mansion. We could find a way to save you. And he just screams in her face and kind of pushes her off the fish thing. And the fish thing flies away into outer space. And I'm like, wow.
That's the last we'll see of Cody.
Yeah. Like, poor Cody.
So I did look it up. The Aconte are from the comics. Their first appearance was in X-Men 156. And Chris Claremont came up with them, and they look just like they do in the cartoon. or even the red and pink and everything like that.
And but man, just like what a tragic, sad ending for Cody. He didn't really ask for any of this.
Well, I mean, it comes back to this point of like what, which of these fates is better, that he like is in a coma perpetually or dies or whatever from kissing Rogue, or
he's only briefly in the coma.
Uh-huh.
Rogue didn't kill him or anything or put him in a permanent coma like she did with Ms. Marvel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
he was fine. He was living a normal life.
Yeah, I guess.
He was okay until, you know, his past association with Rogue came back to haunt him again. In this
way. I guess it was just fate that Rogue was going to ruin him in some way.
I know. It's so horrible. And Wolverine has like a really like sad passing comment like, well, this has happened to me before too with people I've loved. It's like the first one's always the hardest. When you get 12.
Get
10 or 12 more like people really close to you have tragic endings like
that are your fault.
Yeah, that's all your fault, then you know we could talk some more. And I wanted to ask you, Thomas, what are the lessons to be learned from this episode? Because this is a television show for kids.
Don't be a love creep. If somebody shows you by putting you into a coma that they're not interested, maybe just leave them alone. Don't go searching him down.
Right, like so don't pursue later. Misconnections or something. Yeah.
Right. Don't go creeping on your
right middle school. High school. Yeah.
20 years later. I think that's a good lesson.
Yeah, just move on. Like there's probably nothing there. It's probably not worth like accessing those ancient emotions. I don't know. Like, do we learn anything else too? Like, what is that what we were to take from Cody's fate? That it's all his fault. Or no, it was Rogue's fault because she.
It was Rogue's fault, but she couldn't help it.
Right.
Because she didn't know all that stuff was happening.
So is the moral of this episode like shit happens? Like, you know.
The moral of the episode is there are whales in space and there's nothing you can do about it. Yeah.
I would say it's something like Don't ever look for what's on the other side.
Oh, right, yeah, the grass isn't always greener, kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, because Rogue's watching Jean and Scott, and she's like all forlorn. And because of that, she makes a lot more mistakes than she normally would have.
When life deals you a bad hand, just deal with the bad hand. Like, don't try to trade in for some aces.
Yeah, don't keep up with the Summerses.
Wow. Yeah, that's why I think this episode is hilarious. It's a pretty dark ending. There's nothing happy about it other than that like the status quo is preserved because all the X-Men are fine. Mm-hmm. You know, they make it out okay, but you know, Cody is not okay and he was just an innocent bystander more or less. So this is like a bizarrely dark episode with some gross fish innards that we got to witness. So that's Love in Vain. That's all I have. Those are my final thoughts. Any final thoughts on this episode, Thomas?
Yeah, we pretty much summed it up through the episode, I think. I thought it was a fun episode, and it's definitely a one-off. And because of that, everything has to be the same when we leave. And poor Cody, he never knew what was coming. But
I like to think that in the X-Men movie universe, that the same fate happens to Cody off-screen. That this is just one of the random side adventures that happens to that character too, and in between all the X-Men movies. Sonia, any last words on this episode?
I thought this was like such a bizarre episode because we never see these space whales before or after that I can remember. Right. But like it actually does kind of tie in with the universe pretty well because we know that aliens exist. We see this Shi'ar. There's like somebody from Rogue's past that we've seen and heard about before. So like it is cohesive even though it's a one-off. And I just really enjoy the X-Men for all this bizarre stuff that they throw at you all the time.
Yeah.
You know, you can like really imagine this coming out of one of the comics. So
it's a pretty good sci-fi. It's a little good piece of sci-fi fiction here.
Yeah, it's strange but good.
Gross elements. Yeah, right.
And I don't mind a tragic ending once in a while.
Yeah, right. Yeah, not everything has to be a happy ending.
Yeah.
Especially for our beloved X-Men. Okay. Yeah, a great episode. another great one. Season 4 not really letting us down with any stinkers. It's been pretty good. Thomas, before you go, let's talk more about the X-Men's podcast. Sure. Like I said, this is a great podcast, folks. Go download and subscribe to it right away. It has my full endorsement for whatever that's worth. Do you want to anything else you want to talk
like
about
recap
it?
Recap us a little. Yeah, well, not you, like sure. a full recap, but like where are you up to? Where are you headed? Like,
yeah,
sure thing. So we've gotten really lucky with this. Like I said, some of us on the show have previous experience with this kind of format, and we've gotten really lucky in reaching out to guests and stuff. If you guys don't know, we've actually had the screenwriter from X-Men on our show. David Hayter joined us for an episode, which was absolutely fantastic. Yeah,
that's a must-listen episode. Everyone has to download that.
We've had some other great guests. Brett White joined us. He's big in the Marvel community. We have some excellent guests coming up. For those people who listen to X-Men podcasts, I'm sure you've probably heard of Jay and Miles. From Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men, and we're going to have them on shortly. We've also made contact with Jordan White, who's an editor over at Marvel, or over at X-Men. He's going to be joining us, and this is a little bit of a tease, but I may have tweeted back and forth with the voice actor for Wolverine.
Oh, no.
Mr. Gal Dodd.
Yeah.
He's a favorite of ours over here.
Yeah, so we're trying to get him scheduled as well. And basically, we're just going through the movies scene by scene. I think today or this week or whenever we're recording, episode 17 came out, and that was the Mystique and Rogue scene where Mystique is looking like Bobby and basically tells Rogue that nobody wants her here and she should run away.
Very weirdly tied into the emotional state of Rogue in this episode, open to suggestion.
Yeah,
exactly.
Negative.
Her emotional state has her very open to bad suggestions.
Right. And
poor decision making.
So it's kismet that you appeared on this episode in light of that.
Exactly. Like I said, you asked me why I picked it. I was, well, here we go.
There you go. It all fits together nicely. All right. Awesome. So that's the X Minutes podcast. Thomas, you really have been wonderful here. Thank you for coming on our show.
Thanks for coming on. Is there any place else that you would like people to be following you or finding you on the internet?
Oh, certainly. If you're looking to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Wookie Lives, and that make sure you spell nice. That correctly.
Love
so
it.
it's a little bit of a nerd test there. You have to find me. If you're looking for X Minutes, go to xminutespodcast.com or Twitter and Instagram X Minutes Podcast. We're also on Facebook. We have a great group there called the X Minutes Danger Room, where we talk about all these episodes that we've had and. Basically, if it's X-Men related, it goes in there and we all talk about it. It's a bunch of fun. And I think that's it, really. Please check out the show. I hope you guys enjoy it. And I really enjoyed joining you guys. I've been looking forward to this for a while, and I'm glad that it ended up being such a fun episode.
Yeah, it was really good. And thank you, Thomas. I had a lot of fun, too. I'll do my plugs real quick. Follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Join our Facebook group, X-Men Task Podcast. Just search it out on Facebook. And rate and view us 5 stars on iTunes, whatever podcast service you use, and that'd be really helpful to us. Thomas, again, I can't thank you enough. It was really wonderful having you in here. If you ever want to come back for any reason, let us know. Open invitation, and wish my best to you, your family, and all your fellow X Minutes podcast crew members.
Thank you very much. Will do.
Sonia, any last words?
Nope.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.